on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. As always, we sure do appreciate you being with us. We have a great show today. First up, we have Bryce North talking about his new book, Don't Be a Little Pitch. Great title, fun innuendo. And then Sean Covey is with us. Of course, you know him. There's no one any more famous in the self-help space. This interview is a greatest hits done several years ago, but you may remember our server from several years ago. That company died and went out of business. And so we're slowly putting some of the greatest hits back up on the new server. And that's what this is. It's a great interview. I want it available to you. Anyway, busy show. Let's go ahead and get started right now. Here we go. Very excited to introduce my first guest today, very cool entrepreneur, and has one of the coolest names I've run across recently. Bryce North is with us now. He is founder of Don't Be a Little Pitch. It is a PR agency that he's built over the last 5 years or so. Incredibly successful. He has scaled another business to 40 different countries. He has been on Dragon's Den, which is Canada and the UK's version of a Shark Tank. Bryce, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's awesome to be here. Very excited to talk with you today.
Likewise. Cool company name. How did you come up with the company name?
You know what? Honestly, the only way to actually get attention these days is to polarize people. If you kind of keep playing it safe and playing in the middle, you're not really going to find those true evangelists or people that really want to work with you. So it came through a fun brainstorming experiment. We laughed about it. We tried it out. And I'm not going to lie to you, a little scary to put it up there, but the attention we got from that was kind of really well deserved. So I'm happy we went through with it.
Yes, I have interviewed quite a few people who have interesting names, dirty words in the title and stuff, and it does seem to make a positive difference. So well played. Tell us about the story. What did you want to do? What did you build? Just tell us about the birthing story and getting started.
Yeah, I mean, my life didn't start off in PR. It's just like a happy accident, I guess you can call it. But I've always had more of a tech background, building SaaS companies, IoT companies, and startups. And so I got really good at one thing, getting attention. And I'm from a small city in Canada no one's ever really heard about. And the goal there was, you know, how do I actually raise funding for some of my companies? The company talked about, or that we're going to be talking about here, called TrackTap, was the one I got into Dragon's Den with. And that was just like a fun IoT device for automotive tech. But you know, we ended up selling in Best Buy and Walmart and all of that. And it came from the same reason we got on TV. It's just, how did I, you know, make enough noise, and how could I make enough noise to get attention in places that really do matter to raise investment and all of that. So my story through building companies, you know, getting more of a little small stint in venture and angel capital, all came with building enough authority and trust online so that when people Googled me, they knew that I knew what I was talking about, and they would pick up those calls and do business. So long for a hold, I had a lot of people reaching out to me asking, oh, how do I raise capital? How do I scale? And it always came down to the same thing. Well, people just don't trust you enough in order to buy or use your products. So maybe we should fix that first. So here we are today. I'm owning a PR firm, working in some great companies, those that need a little more of a reputation fix or just an authority bump online.
All right. So how much capital did you end up raising for that product? I think I saw that, by the way, that product.
Yeah, well, we did a Kickstarter. So in about 30 days, we did close to about $1 million in pre-sales. I mean, all I had was a napkin drawing. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, anything you actually want to sell or start, just start selling right away and get validation. So we did about, you know, close to $1 million in about the first 30 days there. And then we scaled that even further. And I would say that probably, you know, on that show, we got offered 3 deals for about $500,000 and just kind of grew from there. One thing I'm really, really proud about, in like a span of 9 months, I had this idea for napkin drawing. We raised the money, we prototyped, we built the actual hardware, and we scaled around 20 countries in 9 months total. So it was quite a really phenomenal blitz.
Yes. Yes. What was it like being on Dragon's Den? Was it a great experience, or I've heard mixed reviews of those shows.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to a lot of people who have been on Shark Tank. It's kind of the same thing. It's all TV, right? I mean, I think the stat is 20% or less of those that actually get a yes on the show turn to a real investment. So that's 20% of yes is actually less than that become actual investments. So, you know, we spent maybe about an hour on the show being peppered with questions, some nice, some not, and it's all just for TV. But it was exciting at the same time, you know, being kind of the heat, cameras on you, and people trying to poke holes in every aspect of your company, trying to stand your ground. So, and a fine balance of, you know, being and performing for TV and, you know, trying to defend your startup at the same time.
I was actually on Shark Tank myself, not as one of the contestants, but one of the very first Shark Tank deals that ever happened turned out badly. And they wanted, what's her name? Barbara wanted out of the deal. And so I arranged a way for her to get out of the deal and buy into a different company in a stock swap. And so they did that stock swap on the show as like a follow-up segment on how successful the company is, when in fact it was a follow-up segment on how the company has basically gone out of business. But they pitched it as if it was a cool new step for the business. And I was at the conference table when they were signing the papers, and you see the back of my head on Shark Tank. So that's my closest fame, Shark Tank fame. But
I think that's cool.
I was blown away that how fake it all was, because, you know, I know the truth of this company. It was bankrupt, and they pitched it as, oh, they're so successful that they're having to do a stock swap, you know? And so anyway,
you're not wrong. Everyone wants a glory story. I think we kind of thrive on these moments, which, you know, we ride in other people's success. It makes us feel good. And I think that's what TV is supposed to be about sometimes.
So when you're raising money, angel and VC, do you do that in Canada? Is there a market in Canada for capital investment?
You know what? This is such a heated topic between me and my colleagues, and when I do a lot of speaking. I think Canada needs to understand its place in the ecosystem. So there is capital, there is deal flow, not enough. It's not like the U.S. And so I think Canada needs to get better at understanding how do we actually play nice with our neighbors and really funnel down the companies, you know, in Silicon Valley, in the areas with deal flow and investment. There is enough capital and intention to do pre-seed rounds or seed rounds or even get into like series. But when push comes to shove and we're talking about like more skilled at the same time, more investors are willing to take a risk. The U.S. is kind of the way to go. And understanding our fit in the ecosystem is extremely important for any startup that wants to scale.
Right. So did you raise money and where'd you go? California?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like for other startups as well too, I raised my own backyard in Canada just for a bit of validation. And then, you know, went to bigger cities, just more incubation and raising capital. And yeah, you know, I actually went to the U.S., not California. Arkansas was a place that I got one of my first investments. And then did a few more deals
money?
Actually out of maybe a little bit of Walmart money. You're not wrong about that. So we started there and they kind of pieced together rounds through connections from different states, but wasn't all out west, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I ended up getting my money out of Texas. So there is money in other places, not all in California.
There is. Austin's such a hub. Yeah, I mean, there's such great
Austin
hubs out there, right? I think.
Days. Yes.
You know what? Like one of my biggest mentors told me that, and I'm not quite 40 yet, but he told me this when I was in my early 20s. I'm almost 40 now, but he said, Bryce, something amazing happens when you know, get into your 40s and 50s. You lose more than half of your energy. So the only way to be successful in life is actually to lean on your network. Build that now. Build your connections. Start reaching out. Pitch before you have a product. Sell before you have anything and get on people's radars. That's the only way to build authenticity, trust, and importantly, this network you can lean on.
So did you bootstrap Don't Be a Little Pitch, or did you raise money for that business?
No, actually, everything was bootstrapped. I when I got to this and I've had enough people coming to me, looking to get into PR, I decided, you know what, hell, I'm going to jump into this without even understanding how to build an agency. And so I do one thing quite well. It's just like doing sales authentically, like, and more importantly, with a way of probably asking the right question, understanding problems is what I'm really good at. And when you do sales, I mean, we got to understand that people don't buy products. They buy better versions of themselves. And so I just went and started selling what I didn't have. And I usually do this. This is like my creativity peak where I go in and then figure out how to make it happen. But sold some contracts, then figured out, okay, how do I organize this better and do it better than everyone else, hire a team and make that happen. So here we are, a team of 12 right now, doing quite well. And we're building a lot of software on the side as I get back into the SaaS ecosystem as well too through this agency. It's kind of like my playgrounds working with some cool clients.
Very cool. And what kind, you said you're doing a lot of software now. What's the bread and butter of the agency? Just normal PR accounts, or what's the bread and butter?
Yeah. I mean, the bread and butter of like the actual agency itself is building a lot of trust online through different reputations and features, podcasts, we're talking TV and online media features. The bread and butter of itself is that we build reputation and trust online. Everyone's got this misconception that PR is meant for sales. I'll get featured. I will bring in dollars. It can happen, but it's a good byproduct. The right way is to actually get enough attention so that when you're calling people or emailing people or messaging people, they Google you, they see you're legitimate, and you get that sale, that deal, that meeting. So that's our bread and butter of PR, and I'm building a software that's going to automate that and allow us to actually build authenticity and connections with the media and those influencers in a way that will get us and make us a source in the media.
I don't understand that. Say that again. You're building a new product. Say all that part again, Bryce.
Yeah, let's break this down a little bit more. I think PR and marketing has always been very hard to actually quantify. So we've kind of gamified this a little bit where I'm able to actually do enough research and with the help of AI now, understand what your reputation score is out there. And so what we're doing is that we're building this PR tool that actually will allow you to understand what your score is, where you fit in terms of media, who you are able or allowed to even talk to and pitch in the media based upon your reputation and the previous coverage you have, and help actually get you out there, automate, build, and get coverage in places that build up your authority, and then utilize it based upon like a score of, you know, like it's a gamification, but score of increasing your authority and visibility online in that way. So everyone's got different goals. It's whether it's sales or raising funding, tracking different and better talent. We need to quantify that in a better way than just, I got 5 features here. Well, what does that mean? And so we've really found a way to actually tie ROI and numbers and stats towards your progression and building your authority and reputation online.
That sounds like a clout score. Do you remember clout, KLOUT?
Yeah.
What happened to that site?
That's a really good comparison to that. Great question, actually. I don't even know, but I mean, like when it comes down to actually favoring content online and how Google's algorithms change, they've changed so much that even current media outlets are hurting to the fact that things are not backlinking and sourcing. So I think that disappeared when it came down to what Google was doing and a lot of their algorithm and content changes and how they are controlling that ecosystem. So, I mean, it's kind of not easy to peek under the hood and understand what your knowledge graph is, which is how Google takes all your information and builds an authority view online, what that looks like. We've got no visibility. We can only assume. And this is constantly changing, I think, every single year on how Google takes our data and represents it.
Well, I went to clout.com and it sent me to Khoros, Khoros, which is part of the Ignite Tech family. I have no idea what they do. Community software with proven results. That means absolutely nothing. So apparently the clout score has gone away. Bryce, I think you should try to pitch this to the world as the new clout score. And you see what I'm saying?
I do. I like the way you think. That's not a bad idea.
I mean, basically that's what you've gotten, isn't it?
You're exactly right. Yeah. You know, it's that clout type of, you know, mainframe for sure.
So if I get a post up on LinkedIn and I get 3 responses, I get 3 points. Is that accurate?
I mean, it's a little deeper than that. I mean, we weigh this on like a 6 like tier scale where we take a look at like, how are you actually represented online compared to our searches? how's the public being like receiving your reputation? And this is like from what Reddit has to say, from what reviews have to say, what Google business has to say, and all of this. So what's your online reputation look like? Then we take another score. And how does the media and external parties view you? Are you an authoritative source? Are you someone they can lean on? Then we go into like edginess and polarization. Are you sticking out? Are you playing in the center? Are you actually someone that actually people want to listen to? Do you have authority that they want to follow? And then we get into personal brand. You know, how much are you putting yourself out there? Are you hiding behind logos and expecting this company to stand on your own? Or are you able to build culture and instill confidence in investors? And what does that personal brand look like? So we weigh the score based on this and a lot more to actually come out with more of a sliding scale of where you sit right now. And that gives us a really good indication of like, where can we actually improve and who you deserve to even talk to and pitch at that point.
All right. Great idea. I love this. I love it. So
I appreciate it.
Would you say that if you got a piece in USA Today, that's worth 100 posts on LinkedIn or something like that? Is there an equation like this that we can come up with?
You know what, like people try to actually put value towards what media is worth, you know, and they always relate that back to what's the ad dollars worth in that page. It's not that simple. Here's the secret to like the media half the time is that they don't care about really what's interesting. They care what drives clicks. And so our goal is to really understand how do we get into top tier, but a lot of times tier two and tier three, smaller outlets actually have a better impact. So I care about syndication. I care that if you have a lot of smaller features on page 2, 3, 4, 5 of Google, and then a USA Today will pull up at the front page, that syndication process will raise your score a lot higher than just a single feature and a USA Today feature. So our goal is actually understanding syndication and stacking, how that backlinking is working, and how that's shaping Google knowledge and their graph system. Which again, if you don't know what that is, Google someone famous and see that they have these imageries, they have these photos, and these essentially panels on Google. Google yourself, if you don't see that, we can shape that and build that just by playing with Google Knowledge Graph and its systems. And so that's what we're doing. We're just taking what we know that's visually out there and ranking a score based upon how everything's being perceived.
What do you do if you have the same name as someone more famous than you? I have that problem, and there's another Jim Beach who is just a lot more famous. He was the manager of Queen, the band. And so I have to fight against him. What do you do then?
I mean,
you have a more famous person.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the idea is like, let's Google your name right now. Is it taken? Is there someone actually popping up with that?
Well, the guy from Queen is.
Yeah. Yeah. You're at loss. I'm sorry. Like he owns the name and there's no way to own that name now. And so like that's a slight disadvantage, but if you do have a name that nobody owns, you can go and claim that.
Well, it's Wikipedia for him. And then the second thing is my website, jimbeach.com. So I'm coming up number two.
Yeah. I know. And hate to break the news, but, the fact that he owns that name, it will forever be there, especially the fact that he has that much clout as well too. But, you can always come on top of Google. You'll never be number one like him, but you know, enough attention, enough media will definitely put you the number 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah. That's where I am now. Yeah.
He
and I basically alternate. There's something about him and then something about me and then something about him and then something about me. So,
but he's got the photos at the top. You see that, right?
Oh yeah. Oh, totally. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He will win on that.
And, well, he wrote Bohemian Rhapsody, for God's sakes, you know? He wrote one of the best songs of all time. So.
Yeah, he might win in this case. So,
yeah, oh, I know.
Might have to accept their loss.
I'm screwed. At least he's old, so he'll die soon, and then maybe he won't be in the news as much. So
you never know, right? Yeah. We'll see how that works.
What should an entrepreneur who doesn't have the budget to afford you do?
Great question. And I think we need to understand our platforms and understand really what the right thing to do is. And so getting covered is not overly difficult. This takes persistence and some creativity with that. So what I recommend you doing is building up your reputation as much as possible and finding a platform you can own. I think a lot of people have a misconception on what social media does, and I'm going to use LinkedIn as an example. People think that if I post every single day on LinkedIn, I will get a lot of exposure and reach. People will find me, like what I'm saying, reach out to me and want to do business with me. It's not how it works. Now, it can work like that after a lot of consistency, but the way these platforms work is that you post enough to look intelligent and like someone who knows what they're doing, so that when you direct message DM somebody, they're going to your page and seeing that, okay, this person actually is active, they're alive, they know what they're talking about. So that's what every new entrepreneur should be doing, is pick a platform, whether that's LinkedIn, do content and start reaching out to people and start selling. I do the Google side of things. I get enough attention out there so that when they are researching you or Googling you or using tools like ChatGPT or Perplexity to find out about you or your industry, you show up. And so there are ways of doing that, but every entrepreneur should be doing two or three different things. One, owning a platform. Number two is getting enough content on that so you understand that platform. And three, start selling. Start selling before you even have a product, a vision, anything like that, and get on people's radars.
What about the situation where you have company name and a brand name? So in the 90s, I did all of my PR on the company name because that's what I wanted to promote. And we got some great articles all over the place, New York Times, everywhere, but it didn't have my name in it necessarily. It had my company name in it. How do I handle that situation and try to get the clout of those articles to help me now in 2025? When a whole bunch of great articles from, 20 years ago are in my company name? Am I just screwed there too?
I mean, this is more playing the lines of like reputation management. Sometimes we can erase media, control media, push media. And so you can always go back to those and ask them to do some sort of updates, amendments to the article, or start reading a lot more about your experience working with those companies, leading the brand itself and tying to that. We can do that enough that we can start pulling and backlinking and having these stories kind of appear. So, no, you're not at a loss, but you need to start actually pushing and telling the stories in that direction. And, which makes me always, want to bring up the topic that everyone never wants to feature themselves. They say, oh, I don't got a big ego, or I don't like to be face of the public. The company stands on its own two legs, so it's able to scale. I get that. It's inherently wrong. I mean, in order for a company to actually scale and have an identity, it needs to tie itself to somebody, right? And so that person needs to be you. We are attracted to other people's rough edges. We invest in other people. One of my favorite quotes from Mark Hedlund on investors, like, for investors, the product is nothing. So that just shows that people invest in other people's capabilities, and that's where our trust derives from. So we need to start putting ourselves out there, our personal brands, what we're working on, so that people don't just see us with another crazy person with an idea. They see someone who's an intellectual, who's able to build a business, raise money, and carry these things through. Once we do that, that shapes brand and personality for a corporation. Once we have that, that brand can stand on its own and get its own media. I'm not talking years, I'm talking takes months to build this, but we need to set that foundation and do it right.
Very well said. Very well said. What about people who have just started and are trying to build a business? Is there one thing they should focus on? Should they focus on their personal brand, the company brand? Where should I focus if I have very little bandwidth?
Yeah, great question. I think you should be focusing on your personal brand. The company is not really worth anything yet. There doesn't have any merit. And when we do business with people, we do on trust. And I've mentioned this a few times on our call, but I think that we get cold emails daily about everyone pitching the same thing, the same offer, the same performance. We just want to work with someone we know we can trust. And more importantly, we want to work with someone that cares just as much of our business as we do. And I think that doesn't show in a lot of people's communication. So put yourself out there. If you can't promote yourself, then why do I think you can promote me? If you can't help yourself get exposure and help yourself actually seem like you're influential, why do I think you can help my business? And that's a big misconception with people. And it just go start building your expertise, sharing articles, writing content. Go start documenting what you're doing and what you're building. It doesn't matter if you don't have the skill set. What matters is the fact that people can trust your open experience, your transparency, and that you know what the hell that you're actually doing. And that comes with a lot of failures too. People want experience. So share those as well.
Bryce, great stuff. I can see why you're doing so well. How do we find out more? Get in touch, follow you online, all that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Don't Be a Little Pitch, and that's with a P. It's not hard to find, so you can find us on Google. You can go on LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever's your platform or choice. I'm always open for a conversation, even if you know, you're sure or not sure you want PR. Let's chat and geek out about that. So happy to answer any questions along the way.
Fantastic. Bryce, thank you so much for being with us. Great stuff, and we would love to have you back.
All right. Thank you again so much. Great meeting you, and have a great rest of your day.
You too. And we will be right back. And welcome back to the show again. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, I am very excited and honored to introduce you to our first guest. This is going to be a lot of fun. His name is Sean Covey. And of course, you know him as the guy behind the Habits of the Effective Teen, the Effective Kid. He has written a whole bunch of books on that have taken his father was Stephen Covey, the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and has expanded it into a whole new group of best-selling books. Sean has had a very impressive career, New York Times bestsellers, Wall Street Journal number one bestseller. His books have been translated in 30 languages and sold 8 million copies. The reason we're here today, though, is that his father's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, is back in its 30th anniversary edition with additions from Sean. Sean, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jim. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, congratulations on the 30th anniversary edition. The book changed people's lives. One of the most impactful books of all time. Must be an honor to redo it.
Yeah. Well, it is it's been out 30 years. It's one of the best selling business books ever and sold 40 million copies, which is unbelievable. And it's been a global phenomenon, right? It's popular in every language and country. And so when the publisher came to me and said, hey, for the 30th anniversary edition, we want you to add insights to it. I said, no way. I'm not touching this book. It's like the Bible. And I don't, it's such a powerful book. I'm not going to do anything with it. And they kept pushing on me. After 6 months, they persuaded me. But in the end, I thought the Seven Habits have had such an impact on so many. I'd love to share some of the modern applications and insights. So at the end of each chapter, I haven't touched my father's work because he'd haunt me from his grave. But at the end of each chapter, I have added some insights, like on habit three, put first things first, which is all around managing your time well. I've added some insights and applications and stories that have impacted people. And so that's basically what it is. It's a new version, but the newness is just some insights at the end of each chapter. And then the front matter and the back matter is a little bit different. We've got a new Q&A in there with some classic Stephen R. Covey responses to some really cool questions. And so that's what it's all about. It just came out.
Well, fantastic. Congratulations. I do need to sit down and read it because, to be honest, I did not read the first edition. Never got to it 30 years ago. I guess I was busy failing out of college and stuff like that. Sean, since I did not read the book, I did not do my homework, we thought we should just go ahead and proceed to the test. So why don't you, let's go through the seven habits and then give me a grade on how well I'm doing on each of the habits. And at the end, we'll decide whether I win the car or you win the car. Okay.
We got a deal.
All right. So introduce me to habit number one.
Okay. Habit number one. Let me just back up and just say the seven habits are, it's a sequential approach to help you become effective as a person. So it starts with becoming effective with yourself or getting your own act together and then working well with other people, right? First habit's called be proactive. Be proactive. It basically means you take responsibility for your life and you take initiative. You make it happen. You're in the driver's seat of your life, not a passenger. It's the idea that you've got choice. You can't control what happens to you. You can't control this virus, but you can control what you do about it. And so it's the idea that we've got to to take charge and stop being a victim, because it's so easy to be a victim. I remember my dad always taught me this lesson. A few years ago, before he passed away, I was talking to him and he said, "Hey, how's work coming, Sean?" And I said, "You know what? Not going that great. I hate my commute. It's taking me forever to get to work. My boss is driving me crazy. Such a micromanager. And I don't, you know, I feel I've got way too much to do. I'm just overwhelmed. I'm just running on a treadmill." It feels like, I was looking for sympathy, you know, and he came back and said, "Geez, you're such a victim. If you don't like your commute, then move and stop fighting your boss and get along with him. And, you know, you can manage your time so you're not so busy. Geez." And he walked away.
Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad. But it was good. It was kind of a slap in the face and reminded me that, you know, it's so easy to fall into the victimitis trap of blaming things on other people, on your upbringing, on your parents, on your genes, on whatever, and not taking responsibility. That's the foundational idea, right? Because you really can't practice any of the other habits until you say, you know what, I'm in charge of my happiness or unhappiness. It's about me.
Okay, Sean. I'm a happy person, I think. I enjoy life. Okay. Marriage is good. Kids are great right now. You know, I've published some books, not as many as you, but I get up every morning and we do a radio show every day and stuff. So I think I'm pretty proactive. I think I'm going to give myself a high grade there.
So.
Excuse me?
I give you an A. I give you an A for that.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
good job.
You know, I get up and do my entrepreneurial roller coaster every day, right? So,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give myself a high grade on that. You did too. So let's go on to number two. I am proactive. Thank goodness. Whew. Number one. All right. Number two.
Yeah, two is called begin with the end in mind. So it's the idea that everything is created twice. You create it, a blueprint is created before a building, a recipe before the cake, an outline before the book, right? And it's called begin with the end in mind. And the best way to begin with the end in mind is to have a personal mission statement. And it can be done any way you want it to be done. And some people have long mission statements and some are short, and some kind of have it in their heads. They haven't really written it down, but we encourage people to write it down. It's a powerful thing. And we hold workshops all over the world where, you know, we say we give people an hour or two to get going on their on a personal mission statement, but it's like a constitution, and just write down what your life's about and what's important to you. And it can be a guiding document, just like the constitution of our country has been so important for our country in so many ways.
But Sean, the constitution was designed to be rewritten every 3 or 4 years. So
you can rewrite your own.
Yeah. All right. So Sean, in my hand,
that's the idea.
In my hand, yeah. I have one of my business cards, and just to let you know, my business card only has my name and email on it. Nothing else. No telephone, nothing else, no position. Okay. And on the front, it says goals 2020. And I have signed my signature, and on the back, it has 9 things that I have decided to do in 2020. It's a list of goals. It's not a mission statement. And I do not have a mission statement, a personal statement. I got to admit to that. But on the other hand, I have this business card in front of me that is 9 things I promised to do this year. So what grade would you give me?
That's awesome. I think that's great, because goal setting is beginning with the end in mind also, right? A mission is a great thing too. I'd give you a high grade again, Jim, because not many people have written goals. Very few do.
And not only that, Sean,
I think,
but it's right where I see it every single day.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think you're crushing it.
And I gave this business card to my wife in early January, so she could hold me accountable. So it wasn't just my goals. It was announced public family goals.
That's awesome. Can you share one of them with me?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll share all of them with you. I don't mind that. Number one was go to church more. So we have our church fell apart And so we're in between churches at the moment. And so number one was to find a new church home and go there more. Number two was to increase the number of radio shows that I'm on, or radio stations. I'm on 25 and I want to get to 50. I'm starting a new business in the podcast space. And so the number three is related to that. Number four is an insurance thing that's sort of private. I don't want to talk about. Number five, I want to drink less. And I only drink 2 days a week, but I want to cut that down to 1 day a week. Number five, I want to write a new book. And by the way, that's about 90% done right now. Number seven is I wanted to finish a treehouse. I started a treehouse a couple years ago, and I want to finish it. And I'm about 90% done with that. Been working my butt off. Number eight, I can't read. That's embarrassing. I can't even read number eight. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's you better not.
A remodeling project. I haven't made any progress on that. And number nine was take my family to Disney this year. And that already happened. We already went to Disney in March. So there's my card and how I've done.
That's awesome, Jim. And I would just say, add to it a personal mission. Just kind of the idea of what you feel you can uniquely contribute to the world.
Well, my personal mission would start with,
what is your big picture?
I want to make myself better every day. I want to make my family better every day and try to help as many people start little businesses as I can.
There you go. That's your mission.
Okay, cool.
Write it down.
Number three, please, Sean.
Put first things first. The hardest habit, because we're dominated by urgency. And things get in the way so that our first things, our most important things, don't get the time and attention they need often, like relationships and like taking care of yourself and like continuous improvement and learning, because we're so swamped in tweets and dings and dings and phone calls and texts and on and on. And it's hard, but you've got to focus and learn to do it. And the key things we've learned at Franklin Covey, having trained millions of people in time management, are a couple things, two things I'd share. One is learn to focus on things that are important but not urgent necessarily. Okay, so preparation, planning, prevention, relationship building, goal setting, proactive work, meaning work that is important but it's not due tomorrow morning. With a deadline, you're doing it in advance. That kind of focus, we call it quadrant two, things that are important but not urgent, is so key to leveraging your time. And we've found that it's a sign of effective people and teams and organizations. They spend more time doing these types of things. That'd be one. Second would be plan your week. Okay, daily planning is a good thing. Long-term planning is a good thing. But we find the most valuable unit of time is the week. The best way to maintain balance in your life is to plan on a weekly basis. And so we recommend that the end of the week, maybe it's Sunday night or maybe it's Monday morning, sit down, take 20 minutes, think through your week, block out time for the most important things in advance before your day gets filled up with urgencies. And it's we teach this again and again to millions of people, 20 to 30 minutes once a week, and leverage the other 167 hours in major ways. So between kind of focusing on things like preparation, planning, prevention, relationship building, and then weekly planning, those are two things you can do to help you put first things first, to make sure that your top priorities, wherever they might be, get the time and attention they need.
If you have to eat a frog, do it first thing in the morning.
Exactly. Good. Yep. Better way of saying it.
That's Mark Twain. So, and then the second line of that, cool Sean, was, if you have to eat two frogs, eat the big frog first.
Yeah, very good.
So anyway, I'm mediocre. I do some of that well, and I do some of it poorly. So
okay.
I do, I have a to-do list that's for the week, interestingly enough, not for the day. I try to do my to-do list during the whole week. And I have it right here next to me. As a matter of fact, now it's in my hand. I have a 1x2 dry erase board that I use so I can see it and hold it and move it around. And then I color code the things that are most important, get a little red dot next to them. And I'm pretty good about crossing things off during the week. And I'm, you know, 90% I'll get done by the end of the week. Except health.
Awesome.
You mentioned health, taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And health. Yeah. I do a zero. I get an F minus on that.
Okay. Well, that'll show up and sharpen the saw. Number 7.
Sharpen the saw as in like all the number of times I've been cut into for surgery and stuff. How about that? So yeah, I'm going to give myself a mediocre grade there. For example,
well,
I'll tell you a little story, Sean. I went to the
doctor. You're doing well planning weekly.
Yeah, I do weekly planning, but I went to the doctor. This was a long time ago. And he's like, you're sick. I'm going to get you a hospital bed and you stay here. And while he left to go get me a hospital bed, I put my clothes back on and snuck out the back door because I had a meeting with my banker.
Well, it's great.
So what do you want to say about that? All right, let's move on to number 4.
Okay.
Number 4, please.
Yeah, 4 is, so the first 3 that we just went through, Jim, these are habits that deal with you and yourself and trying to get your act together, right?
Yep.
And then we call that the private victory. The next 3 are what we call public victory habits. So it's winning with other people. It's doing, working well with other people. So now about relationships. So it's called think win-win, habit 4. And it's the foundation to effective relationships. And it means that it's a paradigm of life that, you know, a way you view life, which is I want you to do well and I want to win also. I want both of us to succeed. It comes from a feeling of abundance that, hey, there's more than enough success to go around. It's not me or you. Life's not a competition. And if you get less, I mean, if you get more, it doesn't mean I get less. We can both have an all-you-can-eat buffet. And so to think win-win, which is the foundation of good relationships, it's one way to do it is to balance what you want with what other people want. You're always aware of other people's needs, but you don't want to get stepped on either. So, you know, lose-win is where you say, you know, I care about you, but at my expense. You're low on courage. You say, you know, it's kind of like step on me. Everybody else does. The doormat syndrome. Have your way with me. I'm the nice guy. I'm the peacemaker. I never get what I need or want. That's called lose-win. Not healthy. Win-lose isn't healthy either. Win-lose is I'm going to get ahead. I'm going to beat you. Life is a matter of scarce resources. I want to get as many as I can because if you get a big piece, there's less for me. That's win-lose, and that's not healthy either. And lose-lose is the worst. And you see that oftentimes in relationships or divorces or just, you know, bad get-togethers. It's, you know, I'm going down, and I'm going to take you down with me, sucker. That's lose-lose. So win-win is a paradigm that says, you know what, I want to succeed, and I want you to as well. And the best way to practice win-win is to be high on courage and high on consideration. By courage, I mean, you know, you're willing to step up and talk about and share what's important to you. And you're high on consideration. You care about the other person, what's important to them. And so you want to be good at both. And this is a sign of maturity. If you can be courageous and considerate at the same time, that's think win-win. And it's foundational any good relationship. And people that don't have that, in the end, it's going to come back to bite you. If you win-lose, it'll come back to bite you at some point. Lose-win, you'll get stepped on your whole life. So that's the idea. How you doing there?
you know, I don't want to brag. It seems like the only way I can answer this question is brag, but you know, I do a radio show every day to help other people succeed, you know? So
yeah,
I think the pie is always growing. You know, I'm a grow the pie type guy. So,
right.
You know, if you win, that makes my house go up too. If you sell your house for a lot of money, my house has just appreciated, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And if you buy the same wedding china that I buy, that means you like what I like. It's a compliment, not a competition. Yeah. So I want everyone to succeed, damn it. And I don't care. You know, it used to, I'll go off on a tangent here, Sean, for a second. You know, I used to be really all almighty and moral and say, you know, I don't approve of this. I don't approve of that. I'm not going to be associated with people who do that. And, you know, at this point in life, I'm older. I just want all of my friends to be happy, and I don't care about any of the things anymore. You don't agree with me on this? I don't care. I just want you to be happy. You know, if you're happy, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
So I think I'm pretty good there. Yeah, I just want everyone to be happy.
I do too. Yeah, I think you're very good on that one.
So anyway,
you mentioned that when you talked about kind of your mission, right? It's you wanted to help your family and help yourself and help others. So that's awesome.
Well, I mean, we do the show to help. So, all right, number five.
Five, seek first to understand, then to be understood. You have two ears, one mouth. Use them accordingly. It's the idea of being an effective listener. We're taught how to speak, how to write, how to think well. We're never taught how to listen, which is the most important communication skill of all. And listening is two things. It's you've got to have good intent. You want to understand. And it's a skill. Because most people think they're good listeners and they stink at it. Especially people that get into leadership positions, oftentimes, because people defer to your authority, you stop listening. And to listen well, you've got to, anytime it's an emotional issue, emotions are high, it's an important jugular issue, the best way to listen is to simply follow this formula. Reflect back what the other person is saying in your own words. What the other person is saying and feeling in your own words. So the other day, my wife came to me and she said, my mom's coming to stay with us over the weekend. And I said, you know, okay. And she said, you hesitated. And I could tell this is an important issue to her. And then she said, you know, we spend way too much time with your family, not enough with mine. Your family lives close. That's not fair. And I just listened, and I could tell it was a time to really understand, and I just practiced what I just said. Reflect back in your own words what the other person is saying and feeling. So, Rebecca, you feel like we spend a lot more time with my family than yours, and it doesn't feel right, and that I don't put the amount of effort I need to into your family, and is that how you feel? And it was really a productive conversation, and I got to the deep issue, and it's really helped. The way we get along and the way we manage our two families. But that's the idea is empathy. To have influence with other people, you need to first be influenced. And you really need to understand people. Just listen. No agenda. You're not listening to retort, to reply, to judge, to evaluate, to tell your life story back. When I was your age, I remember I used to walk to school both ways uphill. But rather, I just want to really understand you. And it can really impact your relationship in a positive way.
Sean, I'm on Rebecca's side on this one. I know that you have 8 brothers and sisters, right? Am I right on that?
Yeah.
And you have, you're right. There are 52 first cousins in your family, right?
Something like that.
You don't even know. Yeah, it's 52. I added it up. How the hell can any grandparent keep track of 52 grandkids? First of all, I don't understand that. But secondly, there's so many of you. Of course, Rebecca's going to feel overwhelmed by COVIDs. I'm on Rebecca's side. Sorry.
Yeah. I get it.
Will you please let her know that I'm on her side?
I will. I'll let her know.
Okay.
I'll tell her.
So anyway, I'm going to give myself a high grade for listening. I think I'm a great listener.
Okay. Good.
I take great note, except for this. Once you get to the point where I'm no longer interested, I stop listening and just walk away. So when I used to run a big business, we had about 700 employees, and I was infamous for just walking away. You know, you would tell me something, I'd be done. And I don't want to hear anymore. I'll just walk away. So I'm working on that, Sean. I'm working on that. I've put lead boots on my feet, and it's helping.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, we're running out of time. We need to go fast. Give me number six.
We'll go fast. I'll do it fast. Synergize. It means, I'll tell you one quick example. Have you ever seen geese flying south for the winter?
And they fly in a V.
They fly in a V formation because together they can go so much further than they could if they did it alone. They take advantage of the draft. You know, the bird in the front takes the wind. They rotate. The bird in the front rotates after, you know, 20 minutes and goes to the back. One bird gets hurt, two go down with it and stay with it until it's better. They honk to encourage each other. That's how life is 1 + 1 can equal more than 2 if you work together. The whole can be greater than the sum of its parts. It's valuing differences in each other. And instead of being threatened by differences, you value them and you know that together you can accomplish a lot more. Simple act of positive teamwork.
And number 7.
7 is called sharpen the saw. Never to be too busy driving to take time to get gas. You have a body, a heart, a mind, and a spirit. By spirit, I mean what motivates you. And all 4 need to be nurtured and regenerated and strengthened on a regular basis. So taking care of your body, you know, it's eating well and sleeping well and nutrition and exercise. Taking care of your mind and learning and growing and developing. Taking care of your heart, relationships, nurturing them. Taking care of your soul, reading inspiring literature, doing things, getting a mission in place, walks in nature, inspiring music, whatever kind of invigorates you. All those sides can strengthen you if you will every day try to, maybe not every day, but on a weekly basis. Again, the week is so good. Think through, how am I going to sharpen my saw? Because I'm the most important asset I have to serve others with. Don't take care of myself, eventually catch up with me, and I won't be able to help others as well.
All right, Sean, that is a great one. And as I've already said, I do need to work on taking care of my health a little better. But you know, that treehouse has been great exercise for me. So that's my exercise these days. Sean, give me a grade. Who won, me or you? You know what, Sean?
I think you're doing better than me, Jim.
No. I think we, number 4, we both won.
Yeah, how about that?
Let's make it a win-win.
Absolutely. I like the idea.
Sean, how do we find out more? Follow you online, please, my friend.
Sure. Well, follow me online, and I've got a Twitter, Sean Covey, and we also, I'm author of a lot of books on the 7 Habits, and this new book, the 30th anniversary of Stephen R. Covey's book, just came out, and it's available everywhere. Didn't have a chance to read it. You can't go through life and not read the 7 Habits, Jim.
I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to read this 30th edition.
You need to pick it up and do it.
I am.
Please do.
All right. Sean Covey, thank you so much for being with us. Great information. Enjoyed playing the game with you. Thanks for being a great sport. And we'd love to have you back again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim. I want my Tesla. Let me know.
It's in the driveway.
We'll see ya.
Yeah, take care.
We are out of time. Have a great day, everyone. Bye now.